4:55 on October 16th. Okay, so just the name of the game is ADAPT. So what I promised today was that we would talk about programming with the select operation, the select system call, and how that goes. So I have sort of two pieces to tell you about that. One is just sort of the basics of the system call itself, and then the other piece is the way that you put program around that system call to use it effectively. It turns out that it's not obvious from the definition of the system call just how it is you're supposed to use it. So we will do those in that order. So the system call is looking like this. This is in C, of course. It takes in three sets of descriptors: the write descriptor, the read descriptors, the write descriptors, and the error descriptors, or exception descriptors, called it here, and a timeout. Okay, and notice that each of these is actually a pointer to this set or to the timeval structure for the timeout. So that the fact that it's a pointer is important to the way it behaves, because we're going to see that it actually changes the values of those sets and the timeout structure. So first question is, how do you build a set? And there are a set of there's a collection of macros defined in the header file for, what is it? I didn't write that down. Socket.h, I think, maybe, that contains these. So what you do is you declare, say, a set of read descriptors, like so, in C. And then you manipulate what's in that set using this collection of macros. And they go by names that start with capital FD underscore. Okay? So to make that variable, FD, RDS, into an empty set, you use the FD0 macro. To turn on a particular bit in that set, this is confusing, the name of the operation is set. It's very operational. It says, set that bit in that set. So this set is a verb. Set file descriptor okay, so if you have a particular socket that you want to be included in the read set, you have to turn it on using the FD set macro. There's also FD clear. To turn it off. Okay, so this puts FD in the set, in RDS, and this takes FD out of RDS. And then There's also returns non-zero. If FD is in RDS. Okay? So, just a basic set, I can't even get this word set, a collection of operations on sets, what you would expect. Put something in the set, take something out of the set, and test whether something is in the set. Now we begin to get a picture of what's going to happen. We're going to have some read set, a write set, and an exception set. We're going to initialize them using these capital FD underscore macros, and then we're going to call select. So then when we call select, what happens? Select returns zero if a timeout happened. Minus one if an error occurred. And notice that isn't an error on any of these file descriptors themselves. It's an error in the way that select was called, because errors on the file descriptors are going to get reported in the exception case. So otherwise, the number of ready file descriptors remember, the point of select is to tell us when it's possible to do I/O on a file descriptor. Because if we try to do I/O on a file descriptor that's not ready to do I/O, that call to read or write will block, and we won't be able to do anything else until that becomes ready. And the whole point of this was to figure out which one of these was ready first, so we could do that one and then move on to something else. Okay, so that's what it returns. Let's focus. Much better. And also, it modifies all three FD set arguments to say which FDs are ready. That is, that you can perform if after select there's a particular file descriptor is still in the read set, that means that you are able to do a read operation on that file descriptor without blocking. Doesn't say how much data you'll get or anything like that, but you can do one read operation and be assured that it will not block. And also, it modifies the timeout structure to say how much time is left. But unfortunately, this is only on some systems. Okay, so this is one of those nasty little points of the POSIX Unix standard, that the behavior of select with respect to the timeout is not consistent across systems. And that can, of course, cause portability problems. Okay, any questions about this? Yeah, I mean, it seems relatively straightforward, but it turns out that the pattern for using it is just a little weird. Well, not weird, complicated. So, like a lot of things in computer science, one of the ways that you get to be a good consumer of the services of things like Select is you learn the programming patterns that go with them. Did you get to talk about patterns in 323 or something? Okay, so this is an example of just the way you have to learn to use this thing that works. So the pattern for using Select. So there's some initialization Hello? We don't have a projector, but we do have sound. Okay, initialization. You have to build a data structure containing all the FDs of interest. This is how you do this is sort of up to you. It can be an array. It could be some other set data structure. It doesn't really matter how you do this, but somewhere you have to write down these are the file descriptors that I want to have participating in Select. Okay? Because we're not going to be able to keep track of those with the FD sets that we pass to Select because they get rewritten every time. Okay? So somewhere or other, we have to remember that. Okay. Next thing. Next thing to say here is that this can be any file descriptors on Unix systems only sockets. On Windows. So on Windows, the select call, the Win32 select call, only takes sockets. That's the only thing that it can demultiplex. Whereas on Unix systems, as we said before, sockets are just file descriptors. And so it's very happy to let you put other file descriptors in there as well. Of course, ordinary file descriptors are generally always going to select ready for read or write, generally speaking. But it doesn't care. Okay, so the way we're going to do this is maybe have an array, right? And we'll call it server sockets or something. Call it anything you like. But we will fill in the file descriptors into that array as we discover that they need to be part of fill in with, I'll just write it down, with FDs as we discover they need to be selected on. Okay, so not all file descriptors in your program are going to be part of this, but the ones where you have to be sure you don't block, we will do this. The other thing is, don't forget to compute max descriptor as you go. Now this is Unixy. Okay, so remember the first argument of select is this thing called max descriptor plus one. Why plus one? Well, you got to think about this. It's not the number of descriptors. It's the maximum numerical value of the descriptors that's set in there, in any of these sets. Okay? And why is that? It's so that when the kernel processes the select call, it doesn't have to look at all at least 256 descriptors or on systems up to 64K descriptors. There may be 64K bits in each of these sets. You don't want it to have to look at all of them. And usually, file descriptors are small numbers. You don't use very many of them. So they're like 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sometimes you see 11. Rarely you see 20 as a file descriptor number. And so if the kernel had to inspect all 64K bits to see which ones you were interested in, that would be a lot of work. So you have to tell it what the biggest one is. Well, think about a representation for a set as a bit vector. We've got 0, say, just up to 32. Suppose we're interested in standard in for our select. Well, this is file descriptor 0, right? And we have to tell it to look at one bit. So the bit position, the number of bits it has to look at in here is one more than the largest file descriptor number. Right? Because say the largest file descriptor number is 10, well, the possible file descriptors then are 0 through 10. And there are 11 of those. Okay? So, but it's a gotcha, because we're so used to thinking of zero-based and the number of things that we forget that there's one more when we talk about it as a bit set. So anyway, that's just a gotcha. So as we're filling in the file descriptors into ServSoc, we'll just do a max operation each time and say, have we got a new one that we hadn't seen before? Is it in a new space? Okay, so that's sort of the initialization part one outside the loop. Right. All servers sit in loops to first approximation, where they read something in, do something, and pass it back, and then do it all again. So you always sit in a loop. So initialization part two, every time through the loop. and for each FD set of interest. Okay, now what you're going to find is that it's often the case that you don't need to select on writable sockets. Yeah, often the case. You don't select on writable sockets, and you don't, and often you don't care about the exception sockets. So in that case, you can pass null as the value, that is a zero pointer, as the value for the write set and the exception set. We'll only be interested in the read set. So I'll just do it for the read set. So every time through, FD0, okay, so we've got our sockets recorded in this array serve sock. So we do FD set okay. So watch out here now. Num sockets is not the same thing as max descriptor, right? Number of sockets is the number of sockets that we have recorded in this serve sock array. Max descriptor is the largest numerical value of a descriptor recorded in that array. Okay? So that's a potential place for making a mistake. I left something out up here. There we go. Way back up here. I want to write something else down. Where'd it go? Oh, here. Struct timeval. Let's call it timeout. Okay, just so that it's declared there for completeness. Okay, so having initialized the set, we then initialize the timeout. It has two fields. And timeout dot TV USEC here stands for microseconds. Whatever it is that you want. If you set these to zero and pass the address of this timeout structure, select will return immediately every time, so it won't wait. So it will be kind of a polling polling. You test whether anything's ready. If not, you go on and do something else. You don't wait. If both zero, select does not wait at all. Okay? So, you should now be asking me a different question. What if you want to The two extremes are, we don't want to wait at all, we want to wait for a certain number of seconds, or we want to, what? Wait forever, right? What if I want to wait forever? Then pass null for the timeout structure, address, right? So there's a difference between putting zeros in the timeout structure and passing the address of that versus passing null for the timeout structure, which means wait forever. Okay, so that's what you have to do every time you go through the loop as part of the initialization. Now we're ready to call select. It's like this. Result gets select. We're not interested in the right and exception sets. All right. So that's where all the business happens. And then when it returns, again, every time it returns, you do the checking of the result. If res less than zero, that's an error. Look at ErrorNo to see why. People's experience in this class has been typically that some number of people every year when they do this assignment, they can't get past this point because select returns with an error. The usual reason is that some one of the file descriptors in there has been closed at some point. So back to that, to the initialization, once you've closed a file descriptor, you can no longer put it in the select set. So you have to keep track of that in your array of valid file descriptors or whatever data structure. So that's the usual reason. So don't come to me and say it's producing an error without telling me what the value of ErrorNo is, right? And don't come to me and say it's not working if your code doesn't at least check to see whether the result is less than zero. Absolutely essential. You just can't get away with anything else here. Okay, if res equals zero, remember what that means? That was if a timeout occurred. That's a timeout. And of course, what you do in that case is dependent on what you want your program to do. There's no standard thing that you necessarily do when a timeout occurs, but if one happens, you have to have in mind something to do about it. Okay. Then for each of the different sets, There's a bug in my notes. How about that? I made that mistake I pointed out that you shouldn't make. Okay, so the idea next is some descriptors are ready. That's what select is telling us. We have to figure out which ones and do whatever it is that we're supposed to do on that descriptor. So, I see. No, I didn't make that mistake. How about that? Well, there are two ways to do this loop, so I'm going to show you a different way than what's in my notes. No, I'm not. I'm going to show you what's in my notes because it's better. One way to do it is to iterate through the set, through each of the sets, and say, is the descriptor for, which of the bits in that set are turned on, and those will be the descriptors you have to do something with. But it's better to do it this way, because this way you don't test descriptors that you're not interested in. Okay. We're only interested in a particular set of descriptors. They're in our servsock array. So if so here we're processing the read set. If you had descriptors in the write set and the error set as well, you would probably want to see up your servsock. You would want to fancy up your servsock representation to say which sets you are interested in for each descriptor, and efficiently test only those. Okay? So this is sort of the whole story then about how select gets used. And let me think about something here. Since timeout is changed on some systems, that's why I always reinitialize it here, because usually you want the timeout to sort of be the same for each call. Right? You don't want it to decrease. But there are situations where it's actually the other way around. You want the timeout to happen at a certain time, sort of regardless of how many times you've been through the loop before. In that case, having it changed is useful. You don't reinitialize it every time. If you have a system that doesn't do that, then you do have to reinitialize it every time, because you have to account for how much time has gone by and change the timeout each time outside in the loop. So this is kind of one of the bad things, that the standardization of this didn't happen soon enough to prevent divergence on something as basic as this. But so it goes. Let's see. Other gotchas with select. I'm not thinking of any. Anybody who's programmed with select have any words of wisdom? Chad, have you done it? Have not done this? Okay. Read the man page, got scared. Okay. Well, the project is not too bad in that it is just a set of read descriptors. You don't have to do write, and but you do have to do a timeout. So you have to handle a timeout. Thinking what else here? I think that's pretty much it. I think that's what we need to know about select. So I'm going to turn on my computer here and start to talk about the link layer a little bit, just as an introduction. That's the next chapter. And since I can't project anything, I'll have to treat this as a set of notes for me to lecture from. Not the usual way of doing things. Come on. So I will post the... sorry. That reminds me of something. Nobody complained that the slides for Chapter 4 were not posted. Somebody could have complained about that, but nobody did. I happened to notice, and I did. So they are now posted. Apart from that, I've also posted Chapter 5 now. And so that's there. Well, almost posted Chapter 5. One more step to go, and then it'll be there. Okay, well, this is networking top down, right? So we've done the transport layer and we've done the network layer, so what's next? Link layer, yes, thank you. Exam question. Link layer. What's interesting in the link layer? Well, historically, link layer is where networking classes talk about error detection and correction. Although we've mentioned error detection before when we talked about the transport layer. This is where we talk about how to share a broadcast channel. So, you know, things are not too bad when we have a wire going from point A to point B, and it's maybe got actually four wires inside the cable, and so B can send to A on one pair of wires and A can send to B on the other pair of wires, and that's all easy. But what happens if instead of just A and B on a nice four-wire cable, we have just two wires with 100 hosts on it? Okay? So that's called a broadcast channel. Wireless networking That's a broadcast channel, right? Everybody has to share that same space. So the problem becomes, how do we share the space so that we actually get some good performance out of it? And we will talk about how that evolved from something called Aloha to Ethernet. There are other techniques as well that we'll mention as we go. Link layer addressing. So we've talked about IP addresses, but once we get down to the closer to the physical hardware, we actually have to be able to talk in terms of something other than IP addresses, because these links get used for networks other than IP. And so they're not, the link layer doesn't have inherently a knowledge of IP addresses. And so we have to deal with that. And we might talk about reliable data transfer. And flow control. But we won't, because we already did this. So in a book that, or an approach to networking that starts at the bottom up, these topics all often enter at the link layer. But since we started top down, we did it the other way around. So we won't have to talk about that. And then we will talk about various actual link layers. But not wireless, because that's the next chapter. Okay. So the terminology here is that hosts are equal to nodes, and we'll see that that's a little bit misleading here in a moment, and the connections between hosts are links. Huh, surprising. Link layer, links. Okay. Can be wired, wireless, whatever, links. The key thing to notice here, though, is that at this level, there's a direct connection between the sender and the receiver. Believe that, yeah. Between sender and receiver without a need for routing. Okay? Routing is a network layer concept. This is lower than that. The hosts here will address each other using their link layer addresses, right? And the routers won't be involved in a lot of the stuff that we talk about, although we have to tell, before we're done here, the story of how routers do get involved, right? How do we build the network layer on top of the link layer? Well, the routers are going to have link layer components in them as well that let them understand what's going on the link. Note that at the network layer, multiple link layer technologies may be involved in delivering a packet. So, I can send, and you're all sitting there happily networking away on your laptops with wireless link layers, and what's happening to those packets? They're landing on some sort of gateway that puts them on an Ethernet link layer that sends them through WSU on various kinds of optical links and wired links, and maybe they're going out into the world on an ATM network. All of those can be link layers underneath the IP network layer. So a lot of variability here. And I think one of the amazing things and why the world is the way it is today in terms of being as connected as it is that the vision of IP to embrace all of these different kinds of links made the world connectable. And people who sort of hone in on a link layer as the solution to the world's problems are just wrong. Right? It has been demonstrated that that's wrong. And in the research that I do working with the electric power industry, this is often the behavior that we see, is that they want to hone in, focus in on a single kind of link layer technology and say, this is the way the world will be. And it's almost certainly not going to be the case, based on at least on the history of the Internet as I see it. So, okay, I'm going to stop there. Hopefully we'll have a projector by Monday, or I can bring a projector or something, because this is real slow going this way. And it's slow going over stuff that we don't need to be slow on. That's the part. Some things that I like to do. I would have done the select stuff essentially in the same way, with the projectors, without it. But some of this other stuff we just need to be able to flip through. Okay, good. I'm done.